I'm Angela Walsh, and this is the Downhill Slide, perspectives on life from the over 50s, or around about that age anyway. Well, as long as you're old enough to know where you've been, what you've done, and remember most of it. Today, I have with me Philip. Hello.
Hi, Ange. How are you going?
All right.
That's the spirit. It's a rainy old day today.
I know. We're getting drenched at the moment in the Southern Highlands. It's kind of been hanging around for a little while. We don't have massive flooding or anything, but gee, it's a different situation to what we had like 18 months ago, hey?
Well, we're in the middle of a drought 18 months ago,
eh? Yeah. And you've got a property. You rely on the skies to get your water, don't you?
I do. I live on 25 acres out there in High Range, and we've got no water, town water. We've got no sewerage. We've got nothing from our council, but what Mother Nature provides for us.
So it was a bit tough then, and then we had the fires. Yes.
The fires were very scary.
Did you have to bring in water? Did you have to buy it?
I'm one of the lucky ones. I've got a bore.
So
I can pump my own water, but there's a whole other set of problems with that.
It was a bit scary at that time.
It certainly was.
And just putting it out there, did you have a lot of experience to fall back on there, Phil?
No, not really. No.
Come on, tell your story.
Well, as my friends know down here, I moved out of the Highlands about 7 years ago. I swapped my place on the northern beaches in Sydney for a little farm that I mentioned earlier, and we've never looked back. It's been quite a journey. I've learned a lot on the way through. I've made a lot of new friends, and I wouldn't swap it for anything.
But you're talking about a big life change there. What did you do prior to your life as Farmer Phil?
Well, I had a career in IT. And in fact, I started in IT when I just left school, and in the early 80s, very early 80s. And rode that IT wave or boom for a number of years, did quite well out of it, and then decided to go for the classic tree change, swapped it all. And now I'm a labourer for a local earth moving company down here. I've never been happier.
That's such a big change though. And how are your muscles? Was it very difficult in the early days?
The early days. Well, I've had some funny jobs down here, and I've learned a lot. Like, I remember the first job I had down here, I was mowing lawns, and the boss said, "Have you ever driven a zero turn?" "No, I've never driven a zero turn." So, anyway, he gives me a 5-minute lesson on this zero turn. I go in, I do this garden, or this lawn, or this yard, and I thought I was doing pretty well. I'd done 3 laps without hitting anything. And the boss is whistling at me. So I go over expecting some praise. And to my absolute amazement, the only thing he said to me is, "Try engaging the blades." So I was just running it over. I wasn't actually cutting it. But, you know, and they used to, you know, make me feel a bit silly and this, that and the other thing. But as I explained to them, if I'd put a keyboard or a computer in front of them, I could make them look just as silly. So they took pity on me, and bit by bit they taught me, you know, the ways of the land and how to look after it, and the tricks and the shortcuts and the do's and the don'ts. So yeah, it's been fun times.
When we first arrived in the Southern Highlands, we went to the Surveyor General Inn. Talk about the Surveyor General a lot in this podcast, but it's a great little pub. Turned up there and there was a rocking chair with Farmer Phil written on it. How did that come about? It's not there anymore, I noticed. But
no, it's actually my man cave.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. How that came about is I still do have a bad habit of swinging on the back of a chair. Anyway, one of the locals, JD, ticked me off and said, "What you need is a rocking chair." And I said, "Well, if you get a rocking chair, I'll sit in it." And he turned around and he said, "Actually, I know where there's one on a throw-out pile." He said, "I'll grab that and we'll bring it to the pub." 24 hours later, there's this chair. The management weren't happy about the chair, but they said it could stay for a couple of days. Anyway, 3 or 4 months later, the chair's still there. The chair had a personality of its own. They threatened to burn it a number of times, but every time anyone sat in the chair, they realised it was just too good a chair to destroy or to burn. So anyway, the chair stayed. And in fact, one night I was sitting there and somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You can't sit there. It's reserved for Farmer Phil." I said, "I am Farmer Phil." They've gone, "No way. We've been wanting to meet Farmer Phil. Who could this important person be that had their own chair at the pub?"
And there you are.
So I guess the nickname at Farmer Phil stuck from that point on. But anyway, I'm not really a farmer.
Given it a go, though, haven't you? Well, we're
just horses, and I've got a good veggie garden, and we produce eggs. So
I've eaten the eggs. I've eaten the veggies from your garden. I think you've done very well with no experience to make that change. What about you? Your marriage? You've got the lovely Tony, and you've got your son. Was that difficult for them, or did they just go, "Yep, all right, let's go"?
Well, it was Tony's idea to move.
Oh, there you go.
I was retrenched from Lendlease. That was my last IT job on my birthday when I was 52 years of age. And I came home and I told Tony that the job was over. And she said, "Well, righto, go to the pub, get drunk, and then tomorrow we're going to sell up."
Go to the pub and get drunk.
Anyway, so off I went. And sure enough, we sold up. And I knew I needed a change. I just didn't know what the change had to be or what it was going to be. So I came down with an open mind. And fortunately, I said, one of the things we both agreed on very early on in the piece is that we didn't want a suburban block in Bowral or anything like that. We just wanted a little bit of acreage and our own space, because on the beaches we had a backyard about the size of your average ute. So it was tiny compared to what we've got now. And so down we came, and we had to learn about chopping firewood and filling the tanks up and feeding the horses and looking after the chickens. And
did you Google all that?
No, we just used common sense, which apparently is not that common down here. That was one of the very first pieces of advice they gave me. Angela mentioned the Surveyor General Inn, and I must admit I've spent more than a few hours there. But the pub's been very kind to me, that pub.
There are some interesting people that walk through the doors and sit on the stools at the Surveyor General. And I was very surprised to see that you had no experience, because you just seem to know everything, Phil. Or is that just you faking it? Is that it? Fake it till you make it?
Fake it till you make it. No, I don't think I fake it. No, it's...
You seem to have learned a lot very short time.
Well, now I could drive trucks, I could operate machines, I could...
You've just given it a go.
Yeah, I have indeed. And don't regret it. Never look back. I've never been happier. I say to people, I've never had a plant that's asked me a stupid question. And I no longer want that first-class ticket to New York. I'm happy down here.
Ah, now there you go. Yeah. Once upon a time, you had those dreams or those plans, and I'm sure you enacted a lot of them, did you, of wanting to be here or there or the top of your game and lots of money.
But there's more to life than money.
Yeah.
Quality of life. I can go a week without going through traffic lights. But the amount of traffic in Sydney just used to cook me. It just used to do my head in. So, no, I'm a country boy now, through and through.
Would you ever go back?
No, not in a million years. Not if I won the lottery tomorrow, Sydney would be the last place I'd move to.
What about this, when you're living on acreage, the biggest problem is looking after it. How do you feel about getting older and maybe infirm to a point where you can't deal with it? You worried about that?
No, but it's inevitable. I'm not worried about it, but it's inevitable.
So have you got a plan or you'll just wait? See what happens?
Buy a caravan. Drag Tony up to Cairns. Buy a yacht. Get some crew. No, so who knows? I've still got a few more good years left in me. You're better off looking down at the plants than up at the plants.
It's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, it is.
So if you could look back at your past and the very different lifestyle that you led before in Sydney, do you have any regrets of that? You don't have any regrets moving here and making this big lifestyle change, but what about the lead up to it? Do you?
Oh yes, I've got.
Do you wish you'd done it sooner, or?
I wish I'd done it sooner. I have some regrets in my IT career. I should have banked on the internet. Anyway.
What were you sitting there saying? Oh, that'll never go anywhere.
Oh, sort of. To some extent. Like I.
Because you're talking about the days when Yahoo was still in a garage, aren't you? Before that.
Before those days. Mm. Before DOS. The computers were so big you could walk into them. Literally, like I worked for a company called Wayne, and they owned the desktop. You couldn't walk into an office in Sydney without tripping over a Wayne word processor. And they didn't see the PC revolution coming. They went broke.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, they were a billion-dollar company. So I wasn't the only one.
Oh, no. And indeed, you are a smart man. And that's funny that you weren't grasping onto that. But how many people really did at the time?
Well, Bill Gates did.
Oh, yeah, one.
Mark Zuckerberg.
No, there were a few, but they do seem to be few and far between, because that would explain when you had the big dot-com kind of crash, because people slowly got into it and then bang.
Yeah, exactly. Overkill. Yeah. Anyway, but that's the IT.
Mm.
Different life now.
Yeah, but that's all right. It's all, don't you think it's all pointed you in this direction, and then now you're here and you're very, very happy. That's what it's all about, surely. I mean.
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely.
The journey.
Yeah. It's not the destination, it's the journey.
So what's the hope? What's the hope for the future? What's the world got for Phil?
Well, because I've got one more move left in me. Mm. Tony and I have got one more move.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a keen sailor. And I want to go sailing.
What are you doing in the bush then?
Well, in a previous life, I sailed before I moved down, before I met Tony. So in my bachelor years, I was a very enthusiastic sailor. And I have a burning ambition to sail around the world solo. Not non-stop, but I've got a burning ambition to sail around the world solo.
I'm sorry, I cannot see you doing that. I mean, you've got so many mates. You love to catch up with people and have a beer. You and my husband could be brothers, for goodness sake. Like, you enjoy that social element. I can't picture you being solo around the world.
Well, that's the challenge. That's part of the challenge.
And does your wife support you in that idea?
Especially the solo part. Especially the solo part. I said, if there's a big storm on the first night, don't ring anybody, I'm happy to go down. I don't mean that, but.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I wouldn't have known that about you.
Have you ever read the Kay Cotty novel?
No, I haven't.
Oh, read it.
Is that what inspired you?
Yeah, and Jesse Martin, the two of them.
Mm.
But read those autobiographies.
Well, I've seen
those biographies.
I've seen that film with Robert Redford when he gets stuck in the middle of nowhere and all ends up with nothing but a blow-up floaty and a fire on his boat. He's in the middle of the ocean. I've seen that one.
No. Well, if you can sail around the world solo, then there's nothing you can't do.
How old are you?
I'm 58.
So what more do you want to do? You want to sail around the world, because if you can do that, there's nothing you can't do. But what more would you want?
Well, you've got to challenge yourself.
Mm.
Like moving down here was a challenge.
Mm.
Dealing with the winter, the cold is a challenge.
Mm.
Some of my funnest days down here at work have been days when it hasn't gone above 0 degrees, and I've enjoyed the challenge. I haven't enjoyed doing it, but afterwards, you're like...
You say you did that.
Yeah, and I enjoy that feeling, especially if it's at the pub with my mates having a few beers.
They've got a nice fireplace there. It's pretty good in winter.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It's that challenge. It's that accomplishment. Mm. And obviously sailing around the world or crossing an ocean.
Are you a photographer as well? No. So it would just be about the journey for you, mm-hmm. just a personal journey.
Yep. Not interested in documenting it as such. I had a friend that did it.
How did they go?
If he picked you up at Manly and offered you a lift to Circular Quay in this boat of his, mm. you'd say, I'd catch the ferry if it's all the same. And he has sailed this 27-foot steel ketch around the world.
And how did he speak of his experience to you?
He thought it was an amazing experience. He loved every minute of it.
So do you think that journey might be possible for you now with COVID or post-COVID, with all these the carry-ons that are going on in the world between the major players in the world? Do you think it's still possible to do something so free?
Not this year, but within a couple of years.
You think it'll settle down?
Once we all get the jab.
Yeah, okay. Do you think that will happen? Do you think they'll have a visa for people who have had the COVID vaccination?
Oh, they'll have to.
Mm.
They'll have to. But I think, don't they say that once there's a herd, a point where if 90% of the herd are vaccinated and the other 10% get natural protection one way or the other?
Well, I think it's just like the polio vaccine.
Yeah.
You wipe it out by making sure that nobody can get it.
Yeah.
The majority of people can't get it. So that's how they do it.
It'll take some time, but I think that's where we'll eventually end up with COVID.
Mm. Yes, I hope so.
Yeah.
There'll be another one down the track, no doubt. But as long as we can learn from the experience that we've had, do you think we are learning?
No. But I don't, I think it had Chinese origins, whether it's from a lab or a wet market. I don't think it was anything malicious as such, but I do think it was a big stuff up one way or the other. Mm. And could that happen again? Absolutely. Have we learnt from that? I don't think so.
What about the way we deal with each other, the panic that set in, you know, couldn't get a roll of toilet paper anywhere?
Yeah.
Do you think humanity has learned from this experience?
No. You don't have to look at the Americans or Donald Trump and the Republicans or his mob over there, his lot over there. No, I don't think you would. I don't think we have learned.
What's the answer, Phil?
I am not sure. I think. Well, the jab is obviously one answer, but...
What about this, the way we're interacting with each other? Because some people have... There's an anger out there. There's a lot of fear. People aren't as nice to each other, do you find?
No, I don't think I find that.
That's because we're all nice around here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we're isolated down here and we're cocooned to some extent. And I don't think we... I think we're very lucky. But no, I think that... You know, it's amazing that the Chinese, killed 2 million people? Mm. Or the virus has killed 2 million people, 3 million people, whatever it is, and we haven't fired a bullet. And that's what amazes me. Mm. Like, you know, in 9/11, 3,000 people died. Well, that's very sad. That was horrible. But the virus has killed...
A lot more.
A lot more. Mm. And we just seem to...
And lingering. Yeah. Some people are suffering quite badly for a long time.
And well, they don't know the long-term effects. They can't, by definition. It hasn't been around that long. So who knows? I don't know. I really don't know.
So we've got to make the most of life, eh, Phil?
Every day.
And embrace change when it is presented.
Absolutely.
With a positive attitude.
Absolutely.
And a beer in hand.
And a beer in hand.
You like your beer, don't you?
Oh, I've got a funny story about that.
Go on.
I went to the doctor's. He said, "How much do you drink?" I said, "Well, I buy a case every week." He goes, "What, 24? I said, "Nah, 30. He goes, "You're telling me you drink 30 cans of beer a week?" I said, "Well, I go to the pub as well." He goes, "How many beers at the pub do you have a night?" And I'd go, five or six. He says, "Are you telling me you drink over 60 beers a week?" Angela, I didn't have the heart to tell him about the roadies. I thought he was going to lose it.
Oh, my goodness. You're very lucky, actually, because you haven't had a lot of bad illnesses. You've got a bit of a bad back there, haven't you? But you're quite healthy, relatively speaking.
Apart from my broken leg.
Oh, you've got a broken leg as well.
There's no point nodding, is there?
There's no. No. Phil.
Don't
Phil
nod.
Is nodding. Where's your broken leg? You're not limping.
My ankle. I broke my ankle 11 years ago. That was part of the journey. That was part of...
the transition.
Part of the transition.
Where did you break it? In Sydney or here?
Martin Place. On November the 11th.
Tell the story.
It was Tuesday afternoon. It was pouring with rain. I came flying up out of the steps on Martin Place. I'd taken a tumble. At 5:30 in the afternoon. Not one person stopped to help me. I'm floundering on the ground with a tropical downpour.
Mm-hmm.
I've crawled over on my stomach to the side of Martin Place and got under a building or under an awning.
Are you serious? You were crawling and still nobody helped you?
Still nobody helped me. And I crawled under an awning and I did what any self-respecting man would do and I rang my wife. And said, "I've had a bit of an accident." And she said, "The traffic at this time of night's far too bad. You're on your own." And hung up on me.
But did she know the extent of your injury?
None of us
did. You probably didn't.
No, none of us did. But so that 5-minute walk to the bus stop, an hour and 20 minutes later I got to that bus stop.
Wow.
Got on a bus that didn't quite make it home, but it made it across the Spit Bridge in Sydney, and I rang her and I said, "You pick me up from that bloody bus stop and don't you be late." And then went and got an x-ray to this and other thing. And it was quite...
You must have been in agony.
Oh, I was. But for the next 12 months, it was a bad break. And they used to say to me, "Did your ankle hurt?" And my reply would be, "Only with every step I take on it, mate."
So you're still carrying that injury while you've been learning to work a zero-turn mower and all the labouring work and driving trucks and...
I certainly have. Only hurts on cold days.
We have a few of those here.
Yeah.
You're still embracing the life, though.
I love the life, Dan. I love the life.
Good on you, Phil. Well, I suppose that's a lesson for the day, isn't it? Just keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make the most of your time. Yeah.
Don't give up.
Thank you. Thank you for the chat today.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
You headed to the pub?
Yep. Taking your husband with me.
Of course. It was great catching up with Philip, finding out more about the transition from city life to country life. He seems to have done it very well, always with a bit of a laugh, Phil. So I found some music. This is by Dave O'Neill and Bob Rogers. It's from an album they put together called About Time. The song is A Little Darling, and I thought it's not just a great song, but I thought it had something about it for Phil in the tone of it. It sounded a bit like a sailing song, and Phil wants to sail around the world solo, so I thought, why not? Here's a little bit of Little Darling. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.
Sleep.